extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Tom Bogert, immaculately groomed as always, eyebrows glistening from the spit you literally just rubbed into
Come
them.
Come on, Wiebe.
That sounds a lot worse.
Yeah, let the people at home enjoy their day.
Jesus Christ.
David Goss, also with us, Matt Doyle. Didn't survive decision day. He was not able to battle through.
It was too much for him.
It was a lot. It was a lot for everybody. 16 standing changes. We have our MLS Cup playoffs bracket set. You can sign up for the bracket challenge. We will, of course, be doing so, but the deadline is not until the first round. So don't panic. Don't listen to the show late. You're like about to watch the wild card games on Wednesday night and think, I have to run and do this right now. You have a little bit of time to do it. So big show today. Packed show today. Best things we saw on decision day. Check. You know we're doing that. Breaking down the battle for the playoff spots in the East and the West. Red Bulls with a playoff miracle to make it 14th straight. We'll also preview the wild card games on Wednesday night. Take a look ahead to the first round matchups, and we'll try to lock these two and I guess myself in on our bracket challenge picks. Plus, crown a golden boot draft.
If you're locking in, winner. We know it's good because Wiebe.
I don't lock it in
he's
early.
He's Mr. Predictions over
yeah,
here.
I don't, yeah,
turns
I haven't.
Out we come to the end of the year. Captain Prediction over
wow.
here.
Wow. I had a whole thing, had a spiel out with two champions we'd like to honor. First, Austin FC, two MLS Next Pro Cup champions.
You might be good at predictions, but I'm quicker
that,
on my feet.
Is that four straight away wins in the playoffs? Am I right about that? To get to and win? MLS
are you quicker
Cup?
On your feet, Dave Goss?
I had no idea what you were. I thought you were talking about yourself.
No, no.
I was like, what are you talking
Austin
about?
Austin FC2.
Yeah. Austin yeah. got, remember, because remember they got picked.
Yeah, they got called out.
Yeah, and then they beat Colorado, who have been
I think they got called out
year.
Twice. Didn't Kansas City call them out once?
Yeah, Kansas City called them
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Then I think they got drafted in the next round, called out.
By Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they went and they beat Columbus coming from behind.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. I would like to also take a victory lap as well here. Of course, Dave blew this one for me, but I am the Shield winner.
It's been a good day.
When it comes to predictions in the 2023 regular season among MLS pundits.
Among, as Justin Miram would say, experts.
Yes, correct. You had the quotes
Shout out
there.
To Justin Miram.
For those listening, he threw up the quotes. It is a podcast, after all. George Tabone has been tracking this all season long, has a beautiful Google Doc. It is incredible how many of our listeners are deep in Excel spreadsheets. And the final tally, Andrew Wiebe on top, 93 spots wrong. That's basically how we're doing this. That's how far I was from perfection. Daniel Slayton was second with 95 off. Matt Doyle, the only other person with two digits on 99. Then it's J. Sam Jones, David Goss, and Tom Bogert rounding out
the top
six. I
like how you found a way to make that. Like, only one on two digits.
Yeah. No, there's only three of us.
Yeah.
No, I mean, if you were on two digits, maybe you could join the club.
Wiebe, I just want to say, if I had one, I would have sent George Tabone something as a thank you for compiling these numbers. So are you going to send him something?
Yeah, probably this jacket you're wearing.
I'm not giving you my jacket to send him.
Well, we'll see about that.
So you gotta figure it out.
Kalen Carr was not involved. Joshua Bowers says, was Kalen Carr too busy at Bar Louie to make predictions? Which I thought that was one of the most interesting tweets we got this week. Also, in other news, Extra Time dusted MLS 360.
Whoa.
Hey.
New kids on the block.
No, it's just facts.
Something to learn.
Just facts.
So Tom finished last on ETR with 109. And Kaylin Kyle, former ETR host as well, or current ETR former. Host. Well, she's not here right now.
Whenever she wants to be in this seat, she is welcome to be here.
She finished first on MLS 360 with 123.
Mm-hmm. BWP. Ooh, tough. 135.
Did he pick LAFC,
I think he had Red Bulls
in Columbus to win everything across the board?
Oh, boy. That's good stuff. All right.
He had Arsenal in first.
Let's get into it, because you're sitting back thinking, okay, enough of the banter. Decision day, 14 games, most of which mattered.
Is that somebody that's thinking that, or is that Maria in your head telling you?
No, Maria hasn't said a single word. But if I was going to be a Charlotte FC fan thinking that, I would say, okay, come on, stop with the banter. Important playoff notes for you here. The schedule is out. Wildcard games will both be on Wednesday night. Full coverage on MLS Season Pass, pregame show, and wrap-up from the studio here in New York City. New York Red Bulls get things started at 7:30 p.m. Eastern against Charlotte FC. New York Red Bulls needed a goal, got it so late. We'll talk about that in a second. Charlotte, well, they did what they haven't done all season long and held a lead. Kansas City, San Jose is your nightcap in the Western Conference at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Those are the teams that snuck into the wild card, and FC Dallas somehow got into the first round. And I just want to warn everybody, if you're accustomed to ETR being on Mondays and Thursdays, our schedule is going to get wonky. We will be back here on Friday after the wild card game to preview the entire first round. Then we're off for an entire week until the next Friday. But that means we'll be back to talk about every game in the first leg of the first round. Of course, three-game series at that time. It is not going to be normal. That's what happens when you have playoff games seemingly every single night for long stretches. Yeah, and there's match previews. Dave, you and I are going to do the match previews for the wild card game. And those will be on Apple
TV. Those are going to be must-watch.
Yeah, just
we haven't done them
in.
Yet, so they're gonna. I know they're gonna
so
be good.
So yeah. Good, and then the wrap up also for the highlights.
I think
and
the coaching takes. Staffs might watch just to get some ideas.
Just to get ready.
Yeah,
you know, you gotta uncover, you know, every rock, turn over every single one. Yeah. All right,
we might talk about the Red Bulls pressing, but that's something
could
we
be.
That's like an
you
idea.
You might see a highlight of a certain goal by the Red Bulls, and that's among the best things we saw on Decision Day. Tom,
J-my, baby.
That was incredible. Incredible down at the end. New York Red Bulls needed a goal to extend that league record playoff streak, to take the record for themselves and not just have a share with the Seattle Sounders. Deep into stoppage time.
Sounders now.
Deep into stoppage time.
Could have done 14 years in a row.
It was feeling, you know, same old Red Bulls. They struggled to score goals all season long. Like of course, is how they're going to come up short by getting shut out on the road. They get a penalty deep into stoppage time. Their typical penalty taker, Omir Fernandez, not in the game. DP forward, Dante Van Zier, not. Is injured. I don't know if Lukinius was still on the field or not. So you think
he drew the penalty, Tom.
Oh, that's right. So my bad. There's just so much going on at that point. Anyway, all these like, who's going to take the penalty? And it's John Tolkien, the left back, homegrown, steps up, holding the ball and buries it.
His first MLS penalty. He said on MLS 360, because I straddle worlds here, that he got confidence and experience in Leagues Cup.
Is MLS 360 trying to claim your standings?
They wish.
Help fix
yeah, they score? Wish that would bring down their mean.
Yeah.
He said he had not done it before until Leagues Cup.
Yeah.
So this is the hidden benefit of Leagues Cup. Because of Leagues Cup, the New York Red Bulls are into the MLS Cup playoffs. I also love that J-Mai looks around that stadium in Nashville. Yellow. And there is one family in red.
It didn't feel like he looked. It felt like he sensed exactly where they were. He was sprinting immediately there.
Feel it.
So he either did it before he shot, which is pure confidence. Like, after I score, where am I running to?
I could
see
that.
Before he took the penalty. Or he just felt it. And that family was stoked.
What a moment.
Unreal.
I think it was a dad and three kids.
Unreal.
Like, you are walking on clouds leaving that stadium.
Yeah.
You're into the playoffs. You were there to witness it. You got to celebrate with J-Mai, who is, you know, and I said, is he a legend? A club legend from the home? I know this is not a huge moment in the sense of winning a trophy, but just his aura, his upbringing, his connection to the club as a homegrown. I feel like this was one of those things that just makes him
a hand tattoo
of a tiger. He's a legend.
He's going to have a really long, successful career. He will be considered a Red Bull legend. I don't know that someone's going to say it today.
Cult hero, for sure.
No, but Tyler Adams, a Red Bull legend, part of that is what Tyler Adams has gone on and carried the New York Red Bull name to. I think J-Mai is going to be similar at some point, whether it's national team, club, whatever. And I think, yes, this will be in his repertoire or his best hits when you go to the back of the album and be like, remember that? Yeah.
He called out the haters, too, afterwards.
He's drawn some good red cards. I think those might be high up there, too.
So we're not among the haters, I got to tell you.
No, I actually was overcompensated.
You had him second in your predictions. I was third.
A lot of in the carryover.
Tom Bogert, fifth. So still, you know.
You were the closest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't play out the way that we all thought it would in terms of what is this team going to like, defensive stuff. But I think all of our ideas is like, wow, this is a pretty strong foundation. And now they're spending $5.3 million to bring in an in-prime, one-time Belgian international DP forward. That's the one thing they need is these goals. And it just hasn't worked out.
I was more excited for Corey Burke all along, personally.
Were you?
So neither 100%. Worked out. So.
Yeah, yeah, but like, well, that was the point. Oh, yeah.
I was talking to John Mueller, and we did a live blog on The Athletic for Decision Day, and I put in our Slack channel, because I forget, John said a couple things that a good friend, very good dude, very smart, much smarter than me, but he's super, super analytical, so I like just making fun of him and call him a nerd anytime I disagree with him. And I told him that I typed out into the chat to put in the blog three separate times, shut up, nerd, after John said something. But we didn't publish it.
This is pure Dr. Scoop but energy, John, right? Just vibes.
But then so something that he said that was really interesting to me, apparently the Red Bulls lead the league in expected goal difference, which is insane to me. I had no idea that they were anywhere near that. I knew that their defensive numbers were going to be very good, but I thought that they weren't creating
anything. Expected goal difference is just the difference between what you've scored and what you created.
No. It's expected goals for, expected goals against, expected goal difference.
Got it.
So just wanted to get that out there.
Nice.
Did you have any, any Sirminty moments that you, because this is a big Sirminty weekend.
This is my actual favorite moment of the weekend. After Charlotte clinches the playoffs, they're, The team is still on the field celebrating 20 yards away from like midfield. Sirminty is in on the kickoff mark with a little flamingo that he's doing a wrestling routine on, giving it the people's elbow and everything else, just while the players are 20 yards away from him celebrating that they made the playoffs. It was if you haven't seen the video, I quote tweeted it somewhere on my Twitter from Sunday. It was just phenomenal. It's the greatest thing.
What is the moment in NFL history? I can see it in my mind. Because it feels like for me. The guy scored a touchdown and ran to
Terrell
midfield
Owens.
To spike the football on the opposing logo.
Terrell Owens.
Yeah. No, Terrell Owens stood in the star. But he was on the 49ers.
That's that moment. It's Sirminty. I guess it's on his own field. But spiking a flamingo.
And no Miami players fought Sirminty. Unlike Terrell
I wouldn't fight Sirminty myself.
Would either.
I would not step to Sirminty. I will stick with that on best things I saw. Christian Kolina, who has caught some flack on this show, especially year one
Super
in Major League
Kolina.
Soccer. He saved their bacon, their season. Charlotte, doing Charlotte things, are up in a winning position. Inter Miami have nothing to play for, but Lionel Messi starts the match. Kolina pushes that, blindly pushes that Lionel Messi free kick over. It got deflected. He just, reaction, I don't know if he saw it, if he just had a feeling it was going to be there. That was an incredible save to keep them in the match. And then late on, the save on Leo Campana, that is their season. Charlotte FC, if that goal is scored, Montreal are going to the playoffs after losing in Columbus. And as it stood, Charlotte's in. They may not be hosting the game, but they've got an opportunity, though Karol Swiderski left injured, so that's an issue. The flip side, it's not the best thing I saw, but it might have been the most compelling, pure decision day energy I saw. Montreal, Hernan Losada, Sam Piette, the entire team watching the end of that Red Bulls
on
Nashville
a phone?
Game. No,
iPad.
It was on, I think
iPad.
It was on a monitor. It was like, it was like a little, I don't know if they had that set up or if it was from the broadcast, what it was.
My assumption is what they use to watch clips on the side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Watching on, I assume, an iPad.
Oh, well, it's Apple.
Yeah, that I said, an iPad. Right?
Yeah, three of them, right in a row.
And
Domino.
Seeing Anibal Godoy commit the foul, you can see on their faces, like, it's the 93rd minute. Like, all the energy drain out of them. And then the worst, whatever, 2 minutes, whatever it was, between the foul and the actual penalty, your fate in the balance, and knowing that the odds are, it's basically like 80% you're out. And then J-Mai hits it. And that is the two sides of the coin here. Elation and devastation. Red Bulls elated. Montreal devastated. It was a tough start to the season. I guess we'll dig into that a little bit as well. But Dave, get us started here on a special Monday for you.
What was my moment?
Man Bun Monday.
I have no idea what you're doing right now, if I'm being totally honest. You asked me what my moment of the weekend was, and my moment was the biggest day of the MLS season. Messi's got his own documentary. Everyone's talking about the stars. Thiago Almada, Lucho Acosta. Will Dennis Bouanga win the Golden Boot? And Griffin Dorsey arrives for the second time this year as the biggest star in Major League Soccer. Two goals. In the game, he had the opener off the corner kick. Beautifully worked. Sounds like Aurelien Collin did a lot of work on that for the Houston coaching staff.
That gets me going.
Yeah, that's a legendary call out as well. That set the tone, though. Portland basically laid down after that. If they don't score that early, I don't know what happens. So he handles the header well. And the second goal, he said, when we have midfielders like this, I know I'm going to have space. Smacks it from no angle. Probably should have pulled it back.
I mean, it looked so, other than, you know, Open Cup one was a little bit more in transition.
Yeah.
But it looked so much like that of like late arriving run, ball in possession, same sort of general spot, same finish. It was deja vu.
I said this about Alvaro Barrial last week, but we always say, oh, if this winger played fullback or wingback, they'd have a runway to run into and they'd be dominant. It's not always the case. It is an adjustment for players to learn. Griffin Dorsey's done it well. I think I've told this story before, but my understanding is last offseason, Griffin Dorsey came to the Houston Dynamo preseason and asked to convert to fullback because he thought he could be more valuable to the team and fit there. TFC fans and staff and everyone else are saying, no, we already thought that because they drafted him as a GA player and tried to put him there and it didn't really work out. I think now in retrospect, maybe there's other issues in Toronto that have to do with that more than himself. But I think shout out to Griffin Dorsey of being a player, finding his way at the pro ranks. And now he is going to be part of every preview, every commentary around legitimate playoff series on the way to a potential MLS Cup berth, being a factor for one of the better teams in the league. So it's a cool moment. Houston overall is a cool moment. And I think this weekend was a good encapsulation of just what they've done with the pieces they've done it with. You know, Corey Baird at times just pulling players around at will. And you're like, what are we talking about here? Coco with a goal again. Like, they're just fun. And they're one of the best stories of the year.
The 4 seed in the Western Conference. Who would have thought? I guess we have the...
No one. Yeah. Literally. Yeah, everyone... Yeah. Across the board, pretty much in those standings that you looked at, had St. Louis and Houston in one of those two orders, last and second to last in the West.
Home field advantage in the first round. They'll get RSL.
Kalen Carr had Houston first in the West. We never got that.
That's all he sent us back.
I'm not even going to check the spreadsheet. I have complete trust. Oh, actually, no.
That's all he sent in.
I can't check the spreadsheet.
Incomplete.
Yeah, he just did first. Chicago first in the East. Yeah.
I'll go talk to the guys at Bar Louie.
He goes, I went 50-50.
Oh, Kalen, we know him. All right, let's dig into the nitty-gritty here. We've sort of given you the broad strokes, the best moments. As I said, 16 standing changes over the course of the day. 9 were in the Eastern Conference, so that's where it was in particular busy, especially around the playoff line. Results that we cared about and were watching, Columbus and Montreal, a lot hinged on that match because Montreal controlled their own fate. If they won on the road, which is a tall task for that team, they would be into the playoffs, and they couldn't get it done despite scoring early. Like, Sanusi Ibrahim scores, and I'm like, this might be it. Montreal might do it.
Saliba for that goal.
Beautiful.
And it's like, he's been played as a 10 at times this year, not anymore. And the whole time you got played as a 10, you're like, yeah, I kind of get it. Like, he's good at soccer.
Yeah.
It's not his position, but that moment is like, yeah. I mean, I think it's first time the ball's coming into him from his left back, and he hits a through ball across his shoulder. It's unbelievable. And it's like sort of where Columbus is, which is they'll open up. They opened up. They tried to play. They lost it. Montreal hit them quickly. And like, that chance exists against Columbus. The problem for Montreal is Columbus had possession for the other 99% of this game.
That's what I was going to say. After that goal, it was...
Montreal didn't exist.
My God. Yeah. Like, yeah, it was...
Montreal had already made the playoffs, so they left. Trying regen for the week.
You
might have actually been the worst case scenario for Montreal in that sense.
To score early?
Classic case of scoring too early.
No, they needed a goal, any miracle they could get it and try and hold it, and they weren't going to.
I don't know. With Columbus, the longer you could have held it, the better, because the Crew had everything to play for, too. They locked up a CONCACAF Champions Cup spot. They got home field advantage themselves in the top four in the East. Like, yeah. I don't know. This felt inevitable.
I think there's a realistic chance that if Columbus plays well, they could host all the way till the Eastern Conference Finals. We know you're sitting at third, like the odds of it happening are pretty high. They looked great, and a lot of what they do was really fun to watch. I mean, Gressel comes inside and Ian Morris goes out wide to help create some of their chances. Cucho should have had 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And I feel personally offended that he didn't. Tom should be kicked off the show.
You know what? I was getting, before I won the previously unknown champion when it comes to the predictions, I was going to start us with the golden boot draft, but then I thought, no, because I don't want to deal with Tom for the entire show basking in that potential glory, because I don't know the final count. I don't know it. Tom says he thinks he won.
Tom hasn't said anything. I'm not trusting those numbers.
All right, let's keep talking about the games.
Let's do it.
And that was pretty disastrous. And again, with Montreal, and I was making fun of you guys before this show saying, on your last show, all of you guys had Montreal in the playoffs, and that wasn't a vote of confidence in Montreal. It was a vote of not confidence for all of the other games. But like it felt pretty, I guess, I think I know that you guys agreed that it felt pretty obvious that this was going to be a Columbus win. If you're Wilfred Nantse, what a poetic end of the season. Last year, he had to be convinced not to quit midseason after a fight with Joey Saputo when he was the head coach of CF Montreal. That was their best season ever, pretty much, in the regular season, right? If I have that correct. They were phenomenal last year, and Nantse did so much well. He wanted to quit midseason because of a fight with the owner. They stayed on for the rest of the season and was like, even they picked up his option. He was like, I'm not coming back. Now he goes to Columbus, and not only did they beat Montreal both times they played him, but Montreal coming to his new home and, oh, you guys want to make the playoffs? Nah, end not happening
season,
today.
Yeah.
And they did it sitting on the bench in Columbus watching John Tolkien score that penalty. Like, for Wilfred Nantse, that must have been just a wonderful moment. He didn't address it in the post-game press conference, from what I've seen. You know that he wouldn't say anything publicly.
There's but nothing
like,
to say.
In his head, but it should have just been a smug smile and like, oh, what happened? Yeah. I didn't see the bot. I was too busy looking at the top four standings. Yeah,
what are you saying about us going to CONCACAF Champions Cup?
I didn't even realize they were still in contention.
I don't know. What a moment for Wilfred Nantse.
Although, I will say this. You get one Nagby stunner a year, and they may have wasted it on the regular season.
I think he had another one.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. You get two. Normally you get two goals. One stunner. Yeah.
Well, the good news is the Crew have like 19 different good goal scorers, so maybe they don't need a Nagby goal.
Cucho looks good right now.
Diego Rossi did not start. Did he appear?
They said he's going to be fine next week. It was totally precautionary.
There was an injury issue there. Let me ask you this before we move on Montreal. So the whole Wilfred Nantse thing is well known. You lose this amazing coach and also sell a bunch of players and make wholesale changes to the philosophy behind how you play. They lost 6 of 7 games to start the season under Hernan Losada. Is this a failure, or is this actually a sign of potential that Montreal, after face planting out of the blocks, mostly on the road, were able to be in the position they were in, even if they couldn't get it over the line?
I'm going to go first. I'll be quick so I can let the mayor of Montreal go next, because David Goss is the guy here. I think it was honestly a good season for them. Like, I thought it was going to be much worse. The talent drain, losing the players that they lost. I know that they replenished it, but like Mahalo Opoku didn't come until whatever, June or July.
Yep.
Bryce Duke was a big addition that cost them Kamal Miller in the process. Like all of the moves that they made, I thought that it was going to look a whole lot worse. I thought it was going to be a much bigger transition year. In addition to all of the players, the stylistic change from Nantse to Losada, again, I thought that this was going to be an absolute transition. Don't even worry about Montreal. They're not going to be near the playoff line. So I think that they did a lot well. They have a lot of solid MLS players. Again, I think Losada did a very good job for what he was handed and what the expectation should have been. If they will open up the books and just get one high-level attacker, even Christian Espinoza was a $2 million signing by San Jose Earthquakes. That's not an expensive signing.
And originally brought on loan.
Yeah, so something like that. It doesn't even need to be a $10 million for Cucho Hernandez, right? It's just you need to get it right. If they add one high-level difference-making attacker, which is easier said than done, of course, like they're in a good spot. So I saw a quote that Losada was more or less saying, I don't exactly know what's going to happen this winter. I want to be back, but he seemed to be indicating that his future isn't set, which would be wild to me if they let him go. So again, I think overall it was a pretty good season despite all of the, I guess, the mean things I was saying.
I agree with everything Tom says. I think the assumption should be if teams are going to operate this way, which is operate heavily on young players that they do have an idea of selling, you're not going to maintain the level every year. The drops, you'd like to be higher. You'd like to be a playoff team on your bad years. And I think that's what came down to it this last few weeks, was like, just trip over the line, put it down that you were a playoff team, host a playoff game, get your fans excited, be all that. I won't be surprised next year if we're talking about George Campbell as one of the better defenders in this league. I think Gabe Corbo's on that route as well. Joel Waterman stepped up and was good this year. Jonathan Sirwa was good. I think the base is there for them. I think the Opokus, the guys who came in later, Bryce Duke didn't start the year with them. Georgi Mihailovic, they traded for in preseason of that year. He got to start the year after an offseason with the team. So, yeah, I agree with Tom. I think you feel good about what happened. I think Losada turned things around and got them going in the right direction. There's space for them to get better. It'll be interesting to see what they choose to do. There are a couple guys in Major League Soccer that they could go get. We were talking about Diego Rubio before this show about higher level players that exist in MLS. I think taking away Rubio, I think there's going to be a few DPs that are on clubs, on contracts that those clubs maybe don't want. And is that a place for them to go in and get a little bit of experience where a team's saying, what are we going to do? We want to bring in another player. Or here's another one, Gustavo Bo. If you want to bring Sean Kalai in as your full DP and you're not going to bring Gustavo Bo back, is that not the type of player we're talking about who's experienced? And in this league, I think Montreal is in a fine spot. They would have loved to have done it in the playoffs. But I think overall, it's the year that you should have had.
As long as they don't panic and, okay, let's change the coach and let's do all this again.
Because, and I don't think they will.
But look, Thierry Henry was there for a year. Wilfred Nancy was there for 2 years. And again, he wanted to, and now Lasada is saying, it's up to them to bring me back. And, that doesn't sound
right. It's Marco Schellebaum on line one. Sorry, that was a throwback.
The Swiss Volcano?
Swiss Volcano, exactly right. Nashville at home against the New York Red Bulls. Nashville's struggles continue. Hani Mukhtar had a chance in this one. They got pushed just wide. But other than that, not a chance parade for the home team or for the Red Bulls, for that matter. Gary Smith's dream is probably to knock Red Bulls out on the final day with a scoreless draw at home. Just didn't quite get it.
Why?
I don't know. It's just funny to me to think about Nashville being like, we're going for 0-0. We're going to knock them out. Anything to say on this game? We want to save the Nashville talk for the first round.
Are we going to talk about Red Bulls?
Yeah, we're going to do the preview in just a second.
So we're not talking about them.
No.
Okay.
Let's do Charlotte and then... But first, NYC, Chicago, anything to say? It's like, you are who we thought you were, basically. Like, NYCFC didn't have enough. Chicago somehow tricked us into thinking they might have enough.
Chicago laid down in this game. I don't think they had an actual chance in the run of play. Everything was offset pieces. And it was Shaqiri.
There was one Shaqiri shot from...
No, but I'm just saying, they didn't create anything in this game. They never showed the ability to open up and try and push. We're going to talk about this, I think, even more with the West, but... I was thinking about it yesterday. There are 5 interim coaches in Major League Soccer. Chris Little in Colorado, not a part of the playoff race. Of the 4 that were in the playoff race, Troy Lesane and the Red Bulls are the only one who made it. He took over months ago. The other 3 were Portland, Minnesota, and Chicago. All 3, they didn't just lose. They laid down on the final game of the regular season when they had something to play for. I think it just goes to show you, you let a manager go, a culture is broken. It's not just a one-person thing, and I don't think it's a coincidence that those 3 teams let their managers go. There's clearly something wrong inside of the locker rooms in these groups that you can come out in these must-win games and just completely not show up.
Hey, Charlotte showed up. We've been talking for weeks and weeks, months, the entire season, about their inability to close games. And then Lionel Messi's in the starting lineup in Charlotte in front of 65,000.
Kerwin Vargas calls game.
I don't know what to say. I truly am speechless.
It's such a well-taken
goal. I didn't think there was any
Vargas
chance. I thought they were going to get, I thought that was going to be 65,000 fans there to witness heartbreak. I truly thought there was no chance that they could win that game with Messi back and on the form that he showed with Argentina, with their issues in transition moments and inability to close out games.
Well, it's not transition moments against Miami because Miami has the ball the whole time. I think that's what we're going to talk about with Red Bulls, which is they're about to play a completely different game than what they just played because Messi was in the team and Miami had it, which I don't think you ever want to play Messi, but it ended up fitting probably a little bit cleaner to what Charlotte did. But the question with Charlotte that we've talked about for weeks is they've got 19 wingers. They're just trying to ride the form on all of them. Can someone be hitting when they're on the field? Everyone comes in as a sub. They score a goal. They start them the next game. Doesn't work out. Vargas now goals in back-to-back games. That's what got them into the playoffs was Swiderski, obviously Poland now hurt. We don't know. But there's a bit of a level there where Swiderski is going to give you. I think the midfield has cleaned their game up. I think Privet obviously has helped them. Mm-hmm. Kalina was huge.
Yes.
But who else? What can get them the 1% over the line? They need scoring from the wings because there's so much focus on Capetti. And Swiderski, Vargas comes inside on the back shoulder of Capetti. Yedlin has to mark him 1v1. That's the dream scenario. No one has scored that goal almost all season except one time with Brandon Cambridge and maybe once with Miram. And he opens up his hips like he's going to curl it first time with the right foot, and then he takes the touch.
Yep.
And that opens the whole play up.
Yeah. Want to preview the game? We got anything else on this one?
I was just going to say that the 1% stuff, what was so disappointing about their last game against Miami, not on decision day, the one on Wednesday, they should have won that game. And then they gave up a lead late again. They dropped more points in winning positions than any other team in MLS. They have the worst goal difference in MLS after the 84th minute or whatever. They tried to give it away again. It was wide open, and Kalina came up huge, which is what you need when you, again, he's one of the better paid goalkeepers in the league, so well done to him for standing up. But it was kind of the same issues that they've been facing all year long, where this, again, It's big that they stepped up in that moment, but it could have easily just gone the other way.
Yeah. Well, just both these teams, by the way. Red Bull scored on a penalty kick in a moment of madness for Annabelle gets away to get in. They looked the same team.
Yeah, so that's
like,
fair.
If we're going to talk about Red Bulls, by the way, they start Manuel and Tom Barlow. I don't believe they connected on a pass. No, I'm being serious, like looking at the pass chart. You start two forwards so that in transition moments they can play with each other. That's what Philly does, right? Philly is like...
You think it would just be an accident. Like Julian Carranza accidentally kicked the ball off Ua.
A pullback on a missed shot. Yeah.
It's an accident. Just like he lost the ball into Ua's leg and then scored off of it. Like
So the Red Bulls start two forwards who don't play together. Neither of them are super dangerous individually. Luquinhas comes in, tries to connect a little. Omir sometimes as well. And they were hapless in the attack. And it felt like the type of game where they were going to tie 0-0 and be like, we were close. Yeah, technically you were close.
Yeah, it was going to be like, we are who we thought.
Yeah,
we
and were. And I think there is an element for them of like Luquinhas, the speed he can play at, his close touch. He causes some chaos that Godoy fouls him in which he wasn't on the field for a lot of the year. And maybe he would have opened up a few more moments for them to have picked up points over the course of the season if he's healthy and starts 30-plus games. But it's I don't know where he's going in that moment. Like, I don't know that Luquinhas is about to open up, beat Jack Moore and open up a goal-scoring chance if Godoy doesn't foul him. So similar to Charlotte. Like, they basically played the same game. This time it went their way. Now you go into playoffs. Now, for Red Bulls, I think they're a home team. As I said, I think they match up really well against Charlotte. They're a transition team. They're pretty clean. Not pretty. They're very good defensively in their low block. So I don't know that the game goes to Charlotte in Charlotte's favor of the way they want to play. But also we've seen Red Bulls have expectations at home in the postseason in the past and struggle with that.
Maybe the pressure's off for this team.
There's no way.
Maybe it is.
There's no way a club that's qualified for the playoffs 14 years in a row that's coming off the back of the Jesse Marsh teams and a record-setting point team and Tyler Adams and you got Sasha and Brad making picks that don't make any sense in here. There's no way a club like that goes into a playoff game with no pressure at home.
I love that we're just hitting both of them with that. I think I picked them third, but we don't have
to. No, I'm not talking about Red Bulls. I'm just talking about Sasha and Brad choking on the preseason stand.
Okay. Red Bull Charlotte Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Red Bull Arena.
I lost the bet to Sasha yesterday. So. Nice. Actually, technically, I didn't lose yet. I think I need Jordan Morris to score 7 playoff goals.
Hey, Jordan Morris, Leo Chu. Combination. Get hot. Opening day. Didn't they have 4?
Yeah.
It could happen. Would you rather play if you're Cincinnati? Who do you want to win this match?
I think
Pat Noonan.
I think Charlotte, because like the Red Bulls' defensive ability makes it dip. Like, even think of that first round game last year. Like, this Cincy team wasn't as good as they are this year, but they had the bones of the same team. And that kind of came down to the end, and you needed a really big moment from Brandon Vasquez to get a 1-0 win. Again, this was at the Red Bulls. But I think it's more likely that they find success against Charlotte because the game will be more open than just the idea of the Red Bulls being able to lock things down. And then, look, the Red Bulls could draw two of those games and win in penalties. Like, that's I think it's more likely in higher scoring scenarios or more open games that Cincy prevail. But again, if it's a 0-0 and you get to penalties, anything can happen.
It's not going to be easy against Red Bull. So even if you do win, it's going to be like a war of attrition, which
is ugly.
If it becomes a 3-game series, you just as the number one seed that thinks you have a shot at MLS Cup, you don't want to waste energy, violence, blood, whatever becomes of that. Like, that's the type of series it'll be.
Welcome to New Jersey.
Exactly. But the only thing I will say is I think Swiderski is the best player on either of these two rosters.
Yeah.
Very often, playoff series comes down to the best player. But I can't see Malanda and Privet and Byrne and whoever starting at D-Mid and Kalina shutting out this Charlotte team. Sorry, Cincinnati team.
Yeah. Waiting on some news on Karel Swiderski. He seemed pretty annoyed when he came off. And if you're pulling him off in that moment with your season on the line, it has to be something. It can't just be.
He caught some studs into his ankle. So that it was definitely like an impact injury. Or whatever. Like, they didn't take him off because, like, tactically.
Yeah.
I believe at least.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. Wednesday night, Red Bulls, Charlotte. In the West, everything hinged on one game. Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota United around the line. If there was a draw, which I fully expected it to be like 4-4, but we didn't get that gift. Then it would just be chalk. Portland, San Jose, and FC Dallas would all get in. And when you looked at the scenarios, Portland had 6 scenarios to get in. 6.
Wow.
I think it was the most in the whole league. All the different ways.
Well, because they were the highest seed.
Right, and they had the tiebreaker on San Jose and Dallas. So if San Jose or Dallas, if they got a point And San Jose or Dallas got points. Okay, they're going in. They're just a laundry list of ways, and all of those ways got crossed off over the course of the night. And, of course, Portland crossed their own destiny off by losing to Houston. But Sporting Kansas City handled business and now get to host the wild card game. 3-1 win against Minnesota United.
For a chance to go face St. Louis in the first round of the playoffs, where they would also host the game in a three-round series.
That is amazing. Yeah. Didn't win a game. First 10 games of the year.
Unreal.
Did you see Peter Vermes' post-game press conference?
Yeah.
He had like a three-minute rant of come at me, bro.
Experts.
All those people saying that we, I thought you were pointing to me. Those are
experts. Yeah. Well, I think Peter Vermes already knows the clown show.
Look, hey,
the Weeby household.
I said there's no way that you should be letting go of Peter Vermes at the time.
I agree.
And once they got their guys.
But, let's...
Here they are.
Can we just relax on the victory lap of,
getting eighth?
Nobody believed in us. We're the greatest eighth-place team in the Western Conference in league history. Again, be happy that you made the playoffs and everything, but don't be like, you all doubted us. It's like, you didn't win a game for the first 10 games this season. Was this what you set out to do, was to finish eighth this season? Were these the expectations?
Do you think that Red Bull social media is going to screenshot all our preseason standings and throw them in our face again, where we all pick them second and third and they finish eighth? And they'd be like, you guys got it wrong again.
Idiots.
Yeah. That's what it feels like Peter Vermes doing right now.
That's pure jersey at that point. But hey, Johnny Russell in form, Alan Pulido healthy. Still have question marks about their ability to defend at times, but Tim Melia is back in the team and handling business.
Awesome.
Yes.
Eric Tommy is underratedly the biggest. He's better than Gotti Kinda. So I'm
for
curious
sure
to see what happens contract wise. But does Tommy look at it and say, I'm a DP?
He is a DP.
League? Is he?
Yeah. Because Johnny Russell got bought down.
Okay.
It's just a cap thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of them are under Max Fan.
Yeah,
right?
They're all similar numbers.
It could have been either one.
Yeah. But whatever it is, Tommy has been electric for them. He, when Pulido's on the field, is even better. He'll make runs past him, and he can drop in and be the creator. You see Shallowy and Russell at their best because Pulido's on the field, and they are both goal-scoring dangerous wingers. And credit to Johnny Russell. He's had a lot of moments in his SKC career where he's stepped up and been the man.
Yes.
I was hoping he would do a little bit more of it when Pulido was out early if he could have broken through on a couple big goals, it would have taken the pressure off everyone else. But he did it at the last minute when they needed him.
Beautiful goals, too. And Johnny Russell goals.
Cutting
inside, finding that bottom corner with
snatching
the curler.
Souls.
His face is one of the most expressive in all of Major League Soccer as well. That is fun. And I just can't help but think back and that's Kansas City's season on these different moments. You remember the game they lost at home and Johnny Russell was just I don't know how we get out of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
This feels he just looked like a broken man. And that was the exact opposite of what you expect from Johnny Russell. Who's just I'm going to run through this wall. I'm ready for this. Then to flip it and be here. And now have maybe St. Louis on the other side and get to host against a bad road team in San Jose.
Yeah.
Going to be fun. San Jose almost blew it themselves. Very close. If Austin could have got a goal, they would have been out. Portland would have been in. Austin couldn't do it. It was a 1-1 draw in San Jose. Jeremy Obobese had two or three really good chances. Hit one right at the goalkeeper. Hit one off the post that should have been a goal, no doubt about it. But those blushes got erased thanks to the other results around the league. And FC Dallas ran rampant against the LA Galaxy. 4-1. Weakened at Bernie's. Bernie Camungo just absolutely torched them. And then, unfortunately, got hurt and had to come off, so we're watching that closely as well. What stands out to you from the San Jose Dallas games?
I'll go through San Jose. That has just been really disappointing down the stretch here, and I think it was typified Saturday, that it's 1-1 and they're not really going for the winner, which would, we don't have to worry about what happens in any other game. I know that they probably knew the scenario where Portland was. But at home against Austin FC, again, a team that's been eliminated for a little while, they've got their own problems. If you're a playoff team, you kind of control and win that game. They subbed out Obobese when it was 1-1 towards the end. I get the scenarios and stuff.
I was actually more disappointed in Austin, who had literally nothing to play for and were basically stuck in their own.
But that's
end.
The thing. I don't really
just go for it.
It wasn't about them.
Just go for it.
They're on the road playing a team that had something
to get pick up a point on the last day of the regular season.
But you're going to play coherent soccer like adults.
They seemed like the team who wanted it more at the end.
Yes.
San Jose has won one game in the last 10. Their last four games were all 1-1 draws. It's just hugely disappointing from where, earlier in the season, it was they're playing very well, and let's see what happens when they build on it. Not only have they not built on it, they've kind of taken steps back. We say the finishing patterns all year long. Like, it just, there's nothing that's, I guess, reliable enough. And when Christian Espinoza cooled off a little bit, Jeremy Abobazy hasn't been exactly what he was last year. This team is pretty average. And, like, again, it's great that they made the playoffs, and they should celebrate that given where they were last year. Lucci Gonzalez, and I respect him for saying in his preseason press conference, he minced no words. He's like, playoffs, if we don't make the playoffs, it's failure. Like, we need to make the playoffs this year. That's the goal. And they made that. And that's good, but I guess just where we thought about this team in June was, you know, a lot better than
that. Is it just that there was no build from the peak? The peak just happened early.
Yeah.
And then they were just sort of who you probably would have expected them to be rest of the way.
I think part of the problem for this team was always going to be that this roster, if you think about how long it takes to put together a good MLS roster where it's like you bring a lot of pieces in, what stays, how do you add to that? They're at the beginning of that. And even though Chris Leitch was there with Matias Almeida there, they had everything was a short-term contract coming into this year. And like, I think at the start of this year, they had 14 relevant MLS players. And like, this is what happens over the course of the season when you don't have depth.
Yeah, fair enough.
And you are, and they didn't really spend big to add to it, right? They brought in like Matthew Hoppe.
Grizzo was the big
star. Well, and Grizzo was off-season.
But didn't start this game.
Coming back from national team. Yeah.
I know, but still.
But no, and Grazo's been a phenomenal signing. Like, I think the key to them making the playoffs was this was supposed to be year one of a thing. And I think they've accomplished something year one, and you can build on it going forward. I think there was a ton on the shoulders of Cade Cowell, which was when Espinoza cooled off, they needed another option in the attack to open the game up for Abobasi and Espinoza. He finished with a goal and two assists this year. And even in this game, it's Austin FC. They have two wingers as fullbacks. They don't defend. And Cowell had two moments where he blew through the lines with the ball at his feet from his own defensive half. He gets to the final third, and it's just a cul-de-sac U-turn and then drops the ball back. And it's like, open up the game, attack, make something happen. We've seen it with the national team, I think, is what's so frustrating. Now, he's young. He will get better. It may not be at a time when it helps the San Jose Earthquakes that much on the field. And so I think those are some of the frustrating things for the San Jose team. Now, I will say going into the playoffs, they don't give up a lot of goals.
Mm-mm.
They have a clear identity of how they want to play. It is, I just think it's a little worrying for SKC that the game is on their shoulders. They're the home team. They like to play in possession. They like to open up the game. If they make a mistake, they're down 1-0. They're now chasing a team that's super comfortable in their low block. That's super comfortable in their lines, that has Espinoza and Cowell and Abobasi in transition the other way, and has a decent amount of experience. Mensa, Grueso, Jamiro Montero, yeah. They've all been here. Daniel's a match winner. So I think when you look at the postseason, and like we've talked a lot about like a Nashville or a Red Bulls, I think San Jose is kind of in that category.
Fair.
And I don't think it's great for SKC. I'm still picking Kansas City in this first game because I just think they're good. Like we just talked about Tommy and stuff. Like this is a team that I thought was going to be a home seed in the West. They haven't been this year, but now at health, you see some of that.
At health, by the way, on the 27th of August, Sporting Kansas City at home against a full strength San Jose side, 1-3-0. Was a 3-0 win. There were two shots on target from San Jose in that match, and Kansas City had 59% of the possession. So I think you're looking at a game model here that probably runs that basically back.
Yeah, but for some teams, and Kansas City's been one of them, historically, they've had bad moments in the postseason when that's happened. Because that's where they make a mistake in transition, and it's Radoja or Valter chasing, and then it's 1v1 with the back line, and it's a back line that has struggled. But I think for San Jose, it's like, mission accomplished already in making the postseason.
Fair enough.
Not an impressive way.
Oh, I understand what you're saying, but
I agree. I think it's
the second time in the last 5 years they've made the postseason.
There's a possibility here. The nice thing about this game is that, you know, we're like, okay, Karol Swiderski is really the best player in the Eastern Conference wild card. In the Western Conference wild card, there is a good amount of quality.
Yeah.
Like Espinoza, Grueso, Abobasi, Shalwey, Pulido, Russell, Tommy. Even like the goalkeepers, Tim Melia and Daniel, the true difference makers in that sense.
Two of the top five statistical goalkeepers this season.
Yeah, I mean, these teams are, yes, their records are not particularly impressive, but they have talent. If I was San Jose, I'm trying to isolate Espinoza as much as I can and get Montero floating around in that area with Fontas and Ndembi as much as possible. Like, get Espinoza on the ball, and that's where good things are going to happen. If you're St. Louis, again, to go back to the question we asked in the East, who do you want? Got to be San Jose, right?
In my opinion, it's KSC. You're year one. You've won the West. You've set a record as an expansion team. You're trying to build something long term of like a culture, an identity, a club. You want the canon moment. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2. You have to protect the canon moment to become a Spider-Man.
This is it. If you get San Jose, the peak isn't coming. But if you get Kansas City and you beat them in the postseason, you forever have your bragging rights.
And that, like, the rivalry starts there. There's not going to be like, oh, what happened? We beat them 5-0 in the regular season that first year. That doesn't matter if there's a playoff game year one or a playoff series. Is what it would be, which is also like beautiful. Because
I mean, it doesn't matter what happens in any regular season. Until
Lutz already
the other
has his buses from what he thought MLS Next Pro would be a matchup. So he already has the bus.
Lutz is
down.
Ready. Yeah. The charter is good to go.
I just, if you're a professional sports team, you don't run, you don't hide. Like you want KC, you want Peter Vermees to come in and say, no, everyone questioned us and smack them back down and be like, you guys aren't relevant. This is our conference.
Those crowds would be rabid.
Legit.
In both fun series.
Yeah.
I hope it happens. If I'm St. Louis, I think I want San Jose.
Why?
I just think the talent level is different. And when you introduce rivalry into this best of three and you don't have to win games to win a game, if you draw and win in PKs, you're going through. There's just a lot of variability, and I wouldn't want that variability against Kansas City.
But after
City.
We just talked about with San Jose of struggling to attack good defensive team, and you just said you don't need to win games to win a game. That's, to me, sounds like San Jose, especially against a St. Louis team that's worse with more possession than with less.
That could be fair. San Jose just says, cool, we don't need the ball. We're not going to have it in places where you can punish us.
Yeah, although last time they went to St. Louis early in the season, they actually tried to play through them a ton.
But yeah.
That was when...
Probably learned that lesson.
Yeah, but before teams learned not to do that.
Yeah, I think things have shifted a bit in San Jose.
Was that one of those games where players were just passing the ball to
St. Louis?
I think
that was in the first...
It was like the first game was like
when St. Louis.
It was the fourth game of the season.
That was
when it was a thing. It was a 3-0 win, fourth game of the season.
Didn't think we were going to need to prepare for this. But just to remind you guys, do not pass the ball to the other team for a breakaway. It's like it's happened to the last three teams that played them. Just focus on not doing that.
Yeah.
That was one of the Joe Klaus. Hey, did you hand me the ball? Cool. Yeah. I'm off and running. All right. That's the Eastern and Western Conference. Wild card games are on Wednesday night. MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. New York Red Bulls hosting Charlotte FC at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Sporting Kansas City hosting the San Jose Earthquakes at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Those are single elimination matches. We'll then, of course, in the first round, go into best of three series and then back to single elimination for the conference semifinals, conference finals, and MLS Cup. Okay, let's dive into the seeding races. Starting in the East, as it turned out, Columbus and Philly move on with home field advantage. Of course, top spot went to Cincinnati. They were holding on to that for like a month and a half. And Orlando City had locked up number two a while ago and handled business on the final day against Toronto. But
alongside their offseason banner for best offseason, congratulations.
Yeah.
Martin Ojeda, massive season.
He had like 6-10 this year.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe he had those numbers.
Are you watching the games or should you just look at the stats?
Probably.
Yeah. He probably should have been our
forgot that in the opening of the season, I was listening to ETR and you both said Duncan McGuire would be one of the best goal scorers in MLS. I forgot when you guys said that. That's my bet.
Yeah, but see,
I should have remembered.
A best offseason is a package deal.
He's trying to co-opt it.
I'd like to congratulate. Thank you, Tom. Good. Well done to you. little handshake action for you. We're going to get four straight potentially Revs Philly matches. New England won 2-1 on December
2020 all over again. This was like the COVID
NBA
year.
NBA playoffs.
I think it was TFC. It was TFC Philly in 2020, like 55 times.
No, I distinctly remember New England Philly played like 6 or 7 times that season. And like,
I'm pretty sure Jim Curtin was like, I think he came out and was like, what is going on?
Yeah, I think Philly were like 4 wins and a draw going into the playoffs after the 5 games. And like New England beat them in the playoffs. And even he was like, what do you expect? We played 6 times.
then you have Orlando City, of course, in the second spot. And our guy, who we knew would be very good, Duncan McGuire. With 2 incredible goals in Michael Bradley's last game.
He sent Michael Bradley to Norway.
Tough. Oh, that's tough. Yeah. Michael Bradley, by the way, just announced as an assistant coach, assistant or at least helping out.
Assistant
with Bob at Staubach as they attempt to survive the drop in Norway. So he said he was leaving Toronto after that game.
He was a volunteer grad student coach.
Grad assistant.
Helping out.
He's taking a couple
credits. The Norwegian translation wasn't that clear to me, okay? I just didn't have all the details.
Unfortunately, Purdue's an honor is Swedish, so he couldn't help us.
He tried to, but it was gobbledygook for him. He's just like, I don't know. This is not my language. And then Atlanta United and Cincy played to a 2-2 draw. Biggest news, though, let's start there. Thiago Almada, moment of madness, David Beckham-esque.
Bizarre.
Kicks out at Yrsa Mosquera on a yellow card. Yeah, we watched it the night before.
Figured.
Yeah, and it was very fresh.
Yeah, I figured.
Very fresh in my mind. Yrsa Mosquera goes down like a sack of potatoes, just as
are you saying it's
Simeone.
A dive?
It's not a dive.
Got it.
It's an embellishment.
Ooh, interesting.
Certainly.
Yeah.
But he kicked him off the ball, and it wasn't a straight red. It was a second yellow card, which I think is the right call for sure from Joe Dickerson.
If it was a straight red, he would potentially be suspended for the entire first round.
It could be very bad.
Yeah, so he got fortunate, at least,
yes,
in that way. It is a ridiculous
madness
moment of madness for a player who is potentially the most singularly important player to his team of any playoff team. Because obviously Messi and Miami didn't make the playoffs. But don't worry, fans. We got Messi and Miami combo in. Right there.
Excuse me. Messi in America.
Yeah.
If you'd like to, I'm not even kidding. Go watch on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah. He is as important for chance creation, flow of the game, confidence, belief, set pieces. He completely changes Atlanta's game. He's going to be suspended now for the first game. I feel safe in saying Atlanta is going to be in a must-win game two at home because of this yellow card in a match that didn't really matter.
Yeah. Do you think... I've sort of convinced myself that they could do it, that they change a little bit the setup, and you go Shande Silva and Lobogenitze on the wings, Yakumakis
trying to play in transition. That's
absolutely a monster.
They scored actually in this game in transition. Almada created it. Convenient, huh?
Yeah, it is convenient. Well, that's the issue, is that the midfield is not at a level to replace him in any way.
If you play in transition, which means you're going to defend in a low block consistently, on the road at Columbus with this backline and this team,
it's fair.
Matteo Rossetto still plays minutes for this team.
A lot of minutes.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Mayumba, very good.
Yep.
Yes. Rossetto is Rossetto.
Hernandez got the start at right back. I don't know what happened with Brooks Lennon, but either way.
He got an injury. He's sort of.
Yeah. Either way, none of their fullback options are players who are clean in the low block and spacing and lines and 1v1.
Okay. I hear what you're saying.
So
here.
Could you
move Lobogenitze inside and have him play as more of that creator?
They could, yeah.
Yeah. And then you would start
Mosquera on the wing.
Yeah. So we're taking out the best attacking player in the league and we're putting in a guy in Saba who's done.
I can't believe you have slandered Lucho in that way.
Lucho ended up with the two.
You're saying Thiago is the best?
Nah, I was just talking about stats.
Okay, he's arguably.
Yeah, I don't really care on that. That's not the point. I think what I'm trying to say, one, is they're in trouble. And two, we've talked about this a couple times as the league shifts. I don't want to put all of this on this. So I don't want to be too simplistic, but like this is part of the danger of having a 21-year-old that you built your team around, or 22. I don't know that, you know... I don't know. I don't think Lucho does this at his age
now.
Who?
Lucho. Didn't he get a red card late in the season or a yellow card accumulation late in the season? Maybe not ahead of the playoff game.
I mean, he played in the playoffs.
Yeah, but it was...
Yeah, they made the playoffs too. Maybe.
Wasn't there an issue with the referee with Thiago Almada? Did he bump a referee? I rescind that entire commentary before.
I could be totally wrong about what I'm saying right now. I'm just... It's part of what I was talking about with Orlando originally, which was like, as young players from South America become the center core of transfer policy for MLS teams, you have the spot in the middle between buying them at a good number and selling them at a good number where your team is built around them. And I think it's sort of finding that level. And unfortunately for Atlanta coming in, they have mishandled their transfer policy before this. So there isn't another guy. I think the point was like PT Martinez or Marcelino Moreno would be a veteran alongside a Thiago Almada.
I'd much rather be playing with Saba Lobogenitze at 10 than PT or Marcelino Moreno.
Or a South American player of the
1,000%.
Year. PT Martinez.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be unreal in MLS. Yeah, he was not.
I mean, this is where the summer transfer window comes in, by the way. Almada was suspended for 3 games.
There you go. So I think they're in trouble. I understand what you guys are saying. I like the players you're talking. I love Shande Silva. I love that acquisition. I like the players you're talking about. They're all good players. Tiago Almeida is a game changer. Yes. He's a match winner. He, again, back to the original conversation, he would be the best player on the field probably. Maybe not Kucherov's in that, but whatever. Like, it gives you that match winner. They don't have that. They are not a team that I trust to be able to hold up against Columbus in Columbus defensively. So, to me, that suspension has shifted this from a coin flip series to Columbus seems to be the, I think they are one of the easier favorites in the first round in the East.
Interesting.
I struggle to see Columbus, if there is any service at all, slowing down Yakumakis. The form he's in, the way they struggle with direct balls into the box. Like, if I'm Atlanta, I'm like, Patrick Schulte, I want you trying to come out and deal with crosses all day, every day. Now, again, you're right. On set pieces, the issue is you don't have that service, but I struggle to believe that Lobogenitze can't put a good ball into the box that Yakumakis and others can attack. I still think it's more of a toss-up because I don't completely trust the Crew in finishing games. I know that they've played more quote-unquote playoff games recently in the sense that they've kept things tight, but they still got that gene in them. I don't think it's gone. How about Aaron Bupenza? Discipline? What's going on here? Didn't come back from international break in the time he was asked to do so, and now there's an issue. I mean, Pat Noonan was pretty direct and like seemingly pretty annoyed by what's going on.
Definitely very annoyed. Again, very annoyed and disappointed that he was definitely held out for disciplinary reasons on Saturday. And also after the game was like, yeah, it's not over. Like, we're still gonna discuss how we move forward. So maybe he's gonna be held out for that first game, or who knows? No, like, that is,
what do you mean, no way?
The first, I guess, it's a 3-game series. So if there was why
wouldn't Noonan would have said, we've discussed it internally, we're moving on.
But like, maybe that's a message to the player. Like, if you come out and you're like, look, he's going to play in the first game. No, all good. It's a moment in an early stage of a DP's tenure in there where it just seems like, hey, we're laying it down on you, dude. Like, this is the expectation of what's there.
Suspending a player for a playoff game?
And at least keeping it on the table. Like, but I struggle to think that you would suspend him for the whole game.
When they had disciplinary stuff or disagreements with Brenner, they would say, all right, you know, this is what happened, this was over, and we're moving on.
Like, I mean, in theory, they already suspended him for a game of, like, they didn't play him. So they could have.
But a meaningless game.
I don't disagree with you. My point is, and our point is, Pat Noonan had his out after the game, which was something
this
was
the
wrong.
Suspension.
We dealt with it. We are now moving on. He very clearly did not do that.
Yeah.
So
well, when you have Don Baggi,
yeah,
you've got wiggle room.
And Lucho sombreroed someone and then laid it off for Powell for the first goal and then scored the second goal. So they've got that in their back pocket.
Yeah, they got some decent.
But more importantly, they have Don Baggi.
Yeah, more importantly.
We'll see what happens with Bupenza. I'm sure there will be more coming out on that.
Let's just say this. For a team that had already clinched the supporter shield in first place, it was not the way you wanted your week to go.
Yeah, an unwelcome distraction, certainly. All right, remember, as we go through these first round games and talk about the matchups, you don't have to get your MLS bracket challenge in until, I believe, right before kickoff of the first game. So be patient. Let us get through it. Anything to take? Any concern about the teams in the Eastern Conference who qualified for the first round?
I think I already stated.
You got Atlanta? Okay.
Yeah. That's the biggest issue of any of the teams in right now is that Thiago Mata is suspended for the first game of the playoffs.
Tom, any concern for you?
Nashville. They're just, from that League's Cup run, I think we were all ready and expecting them to take that next step. And we've kind of have been thinking that for a while. It's like, oh, Sam Surridge actually looks like the real deal this time. This team's going to start playing, continue to play more expansive now that there's a running mate for Hany Mukhtar. And over the last, I don't know, like 13 games, I think they have 2 wins. And they've been shut out 4 of their last 5 games, 6 of their last 8 or whatever. They're just not scoring any goals. So it's the same old story with them. But again, like, Would it not be the most Gary Smith thing of all time if they, how many games that they could get through 0-0 and winning in penalties to get in advance in the playoffs? But I don't know. I feel like every time that we expect more from Nashville, they've fallen short, and then we kind of start overlooking them again. And would it be surprising if they grinded their way through this? But I don't know. Every time that it seems like they're set up to take that next step, they just haven't, and they've struggled with that.
Nashville are the old head at pickup where the game's 100%. Surpassing them, and you think they're going to die, but it turns out as everyone gets more tired, now they're in their office where the ball's to their feet all the time, and they can beat everyone.
This is where I'm at with
Nashville. And they showed up in, like, the Steven Gerrard jersey, and you're like, who is this guy?
If I was Orlando,
I'm thinking of one specific dude I played on Sunday mornings with a ton over the last few years, where I'd always be like, oh, I don't put him on my team. And then at the end of the game, you're like, he has megged four guys in the last 4 minutes.
If I was Orlando, I would be disappointed to see Nashville on the other side for me.
Yeah, for
I would much rather have gotten the Revs or Atlanta, certainly.
But I think this would be a popular upset pick if Nashville haven't looked so straight up bad over the last 6 or 7
games. I get that, but that's also Nashville. Like,
yeah.
They don't need to be good to win or advance. They have probably, I mean, all respect to Seattle Sounders, at least in the Eastern Conference, the best defense.
Yeah. And also, Hani Mukhtar has
devastating on set
like
pieces.
You know what I mean? So
Hani could turn it on any moment. Sam Surge just showed he has the quality. It's not coming out.
Yeah, though, after like it watching out the Revs go from a back three to a back four this weekend, they may have gifted Sam Surge 2 goals last week.
It's fair.
Because they were much better this weekend.
It feels to me like Nashville could bring out the worst of what we've seen in Orlando, which is like, hey, you guys got it. It's your game to build. Like, can you do it? We're going to be sat in a little bit. We're going to hit you on the counterattack. And we are very, very good at defending teams who just want to move the ball horizontally around the 18-yard box.
I don't disagree at all. I think that that's absolutely a potential outcome. But the concern is we were saying that since June, July. This League's Cup run, that's the real them. And then they're going to strength from strength down the stretch. And we haven't seen it. So, again, it is absolutely a possibility. But to say, like, oh, yeah, like, I think that's what's going to happen. It's and I know that's not what you're saying. But the run
over
said
what I said. I don't remember exactly what it was, but
the point is that it's a big concern because we were talking about this down the stretch. Oh yeah, that's what could happen, and it just hasn't yet.
Yeah, I mean,
but why do we expect it to happen now?
They got shut out at the Galaxy last year in the postseason, right? In the
yeah,
opening round, like they got shut out at the Galaxy. Obviously, a different team. One thing to note: Randall Leal came off hurt in this game. I'm not the biggest fan of Leal in this team, but if goal scoring and creation is your issue, that's a loss, and it's a loss of depth. And then Schaffelberg has not started since he came back from injury, and that could be decision, you know, coach's decision. But either way, those are two of the four wing options that could be off the table or not at full strength coming in. Obviously, Dax will start in the playoffs.
Yes,
suspended for this game, so that'll shift things as well. I'm of the opinion that I get what Tom's saying, and I still think it's not that the Leagues Cup was like this is who they are and they'll play this way. It's like they are a good tournament team.
That's true.
And so now they're back into that. And I do think this brings out a lot of the Orlando, which is Orlando's a chameleon, and sometimes that's positive and sometimes it's negative. In the postseason, in Oscar Pereja's time, it's been the negative, which is like very pragmatic to the point of losing identity at times. And I worry about that for them in this matchup.
Just again, congratulations to Big Dunk. Duncan McGuire keeps on hitting.
So he's got
absolute two.
So
and the first one,
13 goals.
Oh my God! The first one was the sombrero on Michael, which hate to see it.
But you're also like Duncan McGuire. You definitely grew up watching Michael Bradley, and it's like he comes to you. He takes that touch. He slams it in the back of the net. That's got to be one of those moments in your life.
100%. The finish was absurd.
Oh my God.
Like the way you have to reach your foot out to where that ball was in front of him to keep it down, let alone get that sort of power. Oh, that was wonderful, wonderful goal. Let's go to the West on the seeding race. We'll do a full preview, but a tough one for St. Louis. Seattle now 5-0 AG winners against City in this regular season. Any concern about St. Louis?
Nothing new, I don't think, right? Like, I think that we're all aware of this team's quality, but that's high-pressing teams and that are kind of wide open like this all out, like just going back through the history of the league, they don't typically, like, there's always questions about how they're going to do in the playoffs and whether that's a team that's built for the regular season, which I think St. Louis is more so, than built for the playoffs. And Seattle, the other way around, I think they're more built for the playoffs than they are the regular season. Again, they finished second, so they did plenty well in the regular season, too. So I don't think that it's anything new with St. Louis, and I don't think it's disrespectful to point out these I guess, potential red flags or these potential issues.
I don't know. I don't think their confidence is going to be shaken necessarily. You get home games, you get, you know, you hope. I don't know. It doesn't look that easy after we went through the wild cards, but the form is not there. But every time that's happened this year, Bradley Carnell has pulled them out of it. And they do have a ton of quality all throughout the field, whether it's Roman Berkey in the back making things change or Klaus or Leuven, et cetera. I don't know.
I know we've gotten a lot of tweets about this. We've talked about it off and on, but Seattle finished second in the West and seventh in the Supporters Shield standings. Like, St. Louis finished fourth, 1 point ahead of Philly and New England. Otherwise, they would have been tied for sixth. That is wild. just the difference between the two standings. And I think when you talk about MLS Cup favorites and contenders, you go down the list in the East before you get to the West, both in perception and in the standings and in reality.
Even
and in
with,
the power
even
rankings.
With, yeah, in the power rankings, of course, aka the standings.
Yeah.
Even with Seattle? You wouldn't elevate Seattle based on personnel, based on history, based on the defense?
I would elevate them in the West. I wouldn't say that I think that this Seattle team right now is a better team than the top four in the East.
Okay. Nico Adero, final hurrah. Is he going to put a... Is this like Nico time? Says he's not coming back?
Historically, yeah. Him and Rui Diaz. It's odd because Rui Diaz and Nico didn't start in this game. They haven't been starting. They've been hurt. They've been coming back. Do you change the team? Like, if you're Brian Schmetzer, do you change the team?
Well, I think that's part of a good part of the best of three series is that, like, you can maybe change, like, maybe they, you don't have
do
the same
a home team and an away team.
But, yeah. Like, I don't know, man. Like, just, I know I'm a sucker. I know that I'm a little bit too emotional to be, like, a really good GM. I'm definitely too loyal to be a good GM, and I would struggle with that.
Wow. Shots fired. I'm too loyal.
If I was Schmetzer, I would struggle real hard to be looking at Ladera and being like, everything that you've done for us since 2016, everything you've meant to this club, we should build a statue for you out there. You know what? We're going to put you on the bench. Like, I wouldn't be able to do that, and I don't know if that's the right decision or not, but, like, yeah. Again, I know I'm a sucker for these moments, but just the idea of one last ride for Nico and probably Raul Rui Diaz, too. I know that it's been a bit of an open secret this year. A one last ride for Nico and Raul, man.
Nico was trying to not play in the first game. Jared Stroud was out here stirring the pot at the end, and Nico was like, let me get this little elbow up. Let me get chin music on you, young man. I've been here.
I think the argument is like, let's set the stage for you. You come on in the 60th. You win it for us. Why do we have you running around for 60 minutes at your energy? I think that it's probably a losing argument with a guy like Nico Lodero. Like, historically, that's not a guy who's like, yeah, for sure, I'll come off the bench.
The other side of that, though, is, all right, would you rather be subbed off in the 60th right. minute or subbed on in the 60th minute? And I think he'd be like, all right, fine.
Yeah. And then the other part of it is, I think the convo for Seattle is, where do they find goals? They are obviously defensively strong. Rusnak in the 10 gets a goal in this game, is not one of the best chance creators in that spot or goal scorers. But if you pull him deeper and you take a 10-tier or Obed Vargas off the field, do you lose your biggest strength?
Yeah.
Reed Baker-Whiting emerging as an option at left back that is more attacking than Nuhu may change that calculus as well of, like, we think we're going to create more. The one thing I come away from the St. Louis game saying is, as I've said for years and I think is still true, this team, Christian Roldan is the swing.
Oh, yeah, he's everything.
When he's here,
oh my God, yeah.
They're here. When he's here, they can still be here. But when he's up there, when he's on his game, when he's taking early shots and taking advantage of defenses that aren't set and quick free kicks and finding the gaps where Jordan's making the run after, all that stuff, this team's a difference maker. He looked like that player in this game. I think that should be exciting for Seattle fans.
How sick is it for the Roldan bros?
Just up and down the right
just,
wing?
Just right wing life in it.
Yeah.
That is so, it's like a dream. It's, you know, you're in your backyard growing up.
It's a dream for the parents because then they don't have to go to another game.
Yeah, that as well.
They could just do the one.
A lot of dreams, a lot of check marks on dreams here going down. Vancouver 1, LAFC 1. Could have been 3-1 Vancouver, but Ryan Gaul just could not finish a penalty kick in a play. This is a playoff preview as well. They're going to play again, just like the Revs in Philly. In a playoff structure where we could have 3 PK shootouts in the first 3 games, would you be concerned about Ryan Gaul stepping back up to the spot?
No, because I think it'd be weirder if he didn't take a penalty, if it went to a penalty shootout, like if he wasn't one of their 5 penalty takers, then I think it'd become a thing and it'd become like a, I don't know what the word is, but like I think that it'd be worse to just to be like, nope, don't trust you anymore. Like that second PK, like the first one wasn't a bad attempt. The second one, that
wasn't a good attempt.
That was like 6 inches away from being upper 90 and being like, wow, that was an insane penalty.
I respected him after having one saved by Crepo saying, I'm going upper 90.
Yeah, I'm going to hit as hard as I can and put like
top bins.
Yeah.
Who was on the penalty kick? Because it took a little while to get to the actual shot, or one of them. Someone was jawing with Max, where it was like clearly former teammates from last year that weren't having it. I can't remember who it was, where it's like Maxime Crépeau coming back to Vancouver and someone on Vancouver who had played with him being like, don't even start. And there was like a lot going on there. This is going to be a
Kellen,
fun series.
Kellen was on the field too during that moment. They were like trying to help him get off the outside the 18 at the same time.
Ilya walking through.
If you if you were walking in public and Richie Larea was around, you stay like three steps away, right? You get close to him.
He's going to go down.
This was the weirdest way for you to present.
It's a foul. You can't get close to that man without fouling him. It's crazy. He just suckered.
That wasn't a penalty.
Both fullbacks in. Which one?
That first one. Richie jumped into who was it? Plentyo that foul?
No, it was Hollington. But Hollington goes down so early.
Yeah, he already slid.
He's down penalty, so dude. Early.
Why are we rewarding this behavior?
Yeah, you're right. We shouldn't reward players for diving unnecessarily in the box.
Richie Larea jumped into him.
Richie Larea was trying to protect
this
the ball.
This is an argument that Tom has clearly had on a field before. When
I've been on the other side
party.
Of this argument, so I get it, but come on.
Why are we rewarding this behavior, man?
It's not a reward. Tom, he got fouled.
Tom, no one's listening. It's just us. You can admit it. It's okay. It's a penalty.
It's not a penalty.
imagine the cameras are off.
It's not
it's
a penalty.
Just us.
Now
I'm too authentic. You don't have to worry about what I'm like on or off camera.
The best thing on the Diego Palacios one is Palacios, they were mad at Larea on the first one, and Chiellini was furious after the second one. But Palacios is steaming in. He's like, I'm going to crush this dude shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, that was a penalty.
And Richie's just like, yeah, here comes my shoulder and back. Like, run me over. Just that little pause. He knows, man.
Well, he plays at such speed. He attacks defenders at such speed that he knows he has you on your heels most of the time. And if you're going to do something where you try and do something dramatic, which is win a tackle you shouldn't, that he's at the advantage to win the foul. He did it for Toronto. He's done it for Canada. Like, this isn't just, it fits Vancouver and it's happened a couple times.
It's not new.
It happens. But the way he plays the game for the whole game is why Evander fouled him in the one against Portland, which wasn't a moment where he's attacking. It's just you're mentally tired of dealing with him.
And this guy's so annoying.
So you just go after him. Two worrying things for Vancouver. Kubas didn't dress for this game. I think fine. They had nothing to lose. So you protect him, but you need him to be at full fitness for you to contend. And Sam Adekube hasn't really started. He came in this one. Richie's actually played on both sides, depending on who's on the field. He hasn't really started over the last few games. I think he came in, started, and then has sort of worked his way back into fitness. But this is supposed to be the best version of this team is with him on the field.
And hey, Vandy Sartini, new contract. That was announced in the first minute of the game.
That was cool.
Andiamo.
Andiamo.
Let's get some pizza in here.
That's just great branding from my guy, Vanny. Just have a single word.
Well, Rafa Nadal took Vamos. That was like, everyone gets Vamos, and then Rafa Nadal's like, it's mine now.
How about RSL? Winners of four Rocky Mountain Cup games this year.
Game of the week.
Slapped it on the Rapids. That doesn't feel like much of a rivalry. Hasn't for many years now. Diego Luna scores a goal that Colorado was like, you should probably score this goal. Like, walk right in right now, score the goal. But I'm concerned about RSL. There was a team in the Western Conference that made it through into the first round already. RSL playing Houston, perhaps without Chicho Arango. So the word around is that he should be good for the playoffs. But I don't know, man. Hamstrings are complicated. And if they don't have Chicho Arango, I start to get pretty concerned about this team without their two best players, because Pablo Ruiz is the other one, and he's not coming back.
And the defense has fallen apart. Obviously not against the Rapids when they had nothing to play for. I don't think that that's indicative.
No.
But it was Justin Glad and five fullbacks on the field in this one, and Glad has not played up to the level we hoped he would. McMath was phenomenal in this game. He's been really good over the last few weeks. That's not the point. You should not rely on your goalkeeper. And so the defense hasn't held up, and you don't have Arango. That's, I think, overall the concern for RSL is, like, where's the strength? What do you lean on going forward? Now, the one thing I'd say for them is they've been here before. Not all these pieces exactly, but like, there's a lot of guys in this locker room who have come in as the low seed and made a run in the playoffs against a few clubs specifically in the West who haven't. So St. Louis obviously hasn't been here. This Houston group this way hasn't been here. I think the Open Cup helps to have had that experience, but still, MLS playoffs are different. So I just think there's a little bit of, you know, off-field grittiness mentality that, guess what?
X-Dog?
Pablo Mastroian is going to go X-Dog on
this. X-Dog?
Stats will lose to the human spirit
every day.
Anything to wrap up? Anything we've missed, didn't talk about when it comes to decision day or the wild card games that you guys want to get in before the Golden Boot draft?
We didn't lean into it.
Update.
We didn't lean into it that hard afterwards, but it's just I couldn't believe this Portland performance.
Yeah.
Like, could not believe that a team that has been this fun to watch, this attacking, offensive, flowing. I don't know if the nerves and they tightened up. I don't know if maybe because we've seen a few different pieces out there that this wasn't the best setup. I've talked about maybe not playing Bravo and Mascara together because they lack balance, and I thought Bravo was in the wrong position on the Dorsey goal. He steps inside rather than staying outside. But outside of Evander, none of the attacking players on this team showed up. So that was really worrying. I don't know how it affects Miles Joseph's future. I don't know how it affects the team's future. Like, they're already in flux, and it is what it is, maybe. But I thought that was pretty underwhelming. I think less surprising on Minnesota. Like, they just let their manager go. It's a bit of a mess going into it, and Chicago as well.
Why didn't Bongi start?
No idea.
Seems like the one guy who could trouble Kansas City in the ways that Kansas City is often troubled in open field and transition.
Well, you can't blame a specific manager because no one has the full-time job, so that's on you. You should have
known. I should have known. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Figure it out, Weeby.
Yeah, should have known. Yeah, Chicago. I mean, look, we've talked about it over and over. The 8 and 9 seeds, like, they are who we thought they were, basically. Like,
what's the best case scenario with Shaqiri? Sell him?
Real quick on Chicago.
Tom's like, I'm not even going there.
Jairo Torres, nominally, allegedly an attacking player, signed for $6 million, has 0 goals and 0 assists in 41 career appearances with Chicago Fire.
I'm having flashbacks right now to a MLS Daily with Michele Giannone and David Goss. It was Orlando preseason winners-esque hype.
So
they've got a Mexican national team starter in Alfonso Aceves at left back, so you're already high level.
And he's in like the FB ref stats for. It's good to be in the 99th percentile, bad to be in the first percentile. He's in like the first to third percentile in any attacking type of output, which is, I guess, fair enough. Chicago needs more defenders, but it's just like he's a completely one-way player at this point.
And he helped give up the goal.
Yeah. And then in Chicago, again, Shaqiri was $7.5 million transfer fee, and he's the third highest paid player in the league. So, and they have a third DP spot open, whether they bring back Ousmane Doumbia or not. So the positive side of this is they've got, and what I've been told, a whole lot of money to throw at a center forward. Like, a lot of money is the where I'm laying the expectations at. We'll see if it kind of comes down to it. But, like, something that would be high on the league record transfer fees is something that is within the realm of possibility if they get the right target, the right deal. You got to imagine Jairo Torres isn't coming back. You just can't possibly bring him back. That could be a second DP. And Shaqiri might be more difficult to get out of, but maybe he doesn't want to be here anymore. Like, is this fun for him, right? Like, I don't know. Like, so maybe they'll have 3 new DP spots, and that'd be awesome. But, like, other than that, man, it's like, Jesus Christ.
It's bad. It was bad. It was one of those where, again, it was like you had nothing to lose, especially as the game went along. Okay, I think Taylor said it on the Charlotte game. I think it was not wrong of, like, if you're one of the teams that was ahead in the standings coming in, don't lose the game in the first 20 minutes. Don't put yourself out of it like Minnesota did or like Portland did. But at some point, throw a number forward and do something. Unfortunately, Kai Kamara never got the goal. Sounds like he wants to continue his career. Probably won't be in Chicago. And I'm not saying that was the solution. But, like, yeah, these teams, I think it was a really disappointing weekend, not just the result. I think there's some teams that could walk away and say the result wasn't there, but the performance was at times. These are not three of them.
We talk about the Golden Jabouf draft?
That's where you want to go, huh?
I want to talk about something positive.
Well, it depends on your perspective. Golden Boot Draft update, the final of the 2023 regular season.
I think I came into the down 3 goals.
Yeah, believe so.
So it was a big comeback necessary.
Needed a big day on decision.
You had a lot more players playing, I'd point out.
Honestly, I didn't play with any pressure. I had nothing to lose. It felt like I had nothing to lose.
In last place, double confirmed, Matt Doyle, 79 goals, 29 assists. He will have one keeper, which I assume he will use on Giacomo Verrone.
You don't think it'll be Gabby Pereira for when he comes back from Saudi Arabia?
Will Yagata is going to really stand out in his mind, I have to think.
Honestly, Chicharito was a train wreck. This team's actually better than I thought it was going to be when you just highlighted it. Like, I was like, oh, he only had one guy score double digits. Jeremy Obobese, Christian Benteke, Duncan Maguire, and Klaus. Those are 4 good picks.
Yeah, that's pretty good picks.
super good for last place. Yeah.
He might be, might be thinking about the discovery rights
Tom
on Sergio Cordova.
Savage in the fantasy football chat. You know that.
Doyle's coming at me right after this draft, so I've had eyes on him. And
fair, that's fair.
Last place,
Doyle.
Feel better, Doyle. I wonder that you you happen to be sick today.
Yeah, we don't care.
I'm so sad that you couldn't be here to enjoy this with us.
This is Shabazz Napier performance from Doyle.
In third place, the defending champion and current champion of the predictions, Fighting Weebies.
The Rainbow Norwals, Fighting Weebies, United FCs.
Yes, the FC Weebie is 83 goals here. Driussi got double digits for me. Yakumakis was a great pick. Copetti, not so much. Lorenzo Insigne, still regretting that.
Weebie, did you finish close to winning?
No.
So we're wasting time, right? Yes. Correct. We like to smoke losing teams, and then
I am going to. They're all blacked out here, so I'm going to remove the shadow at the same time. We've got a tie according to Anders.
Let's go. Ties.
Three goal comeback.
Unfortunately, by tiebreaker on 58 assists, your champion for the 2023 Golden Boot Draft are the Fighting Tom Kalins.
This was the assist trophy of the year.
Tiebreaker
because we finished with the same the players 90, that we selected in MLS scored the same amount of goals.
90
so we moved to assist.
Who won the supporter shield last year? Was it did they give it to both Philly and LAFC, or did LAFC win the supporter shield?
So just so I'm clear,
you lost.
Your team and my team.
We won.
The players on our team in Major League Soccer scored the same amount of goals. My lawyers have something that they'd like to bring in. Please, can you present the evidence? So this is a game. This is an RSL Orlando highlight, and that is Chicho Arango scoring his first goal for RSL in Major League Soccer. That would put me on 97 goals and 45 assists, would be the 2023 Golden Boot Race champion.
But that, correct me if I'm wrong, that was a goal before August 16th.
It was when we did the redraft. It was very clear.
Give me every player that Tom had. Show me the goals they scored in MLS this year. Take my players. Show me the goals they scored. I finish on 97. He finishes on 97.
Congrats on second place. Me and Kaylin.
I will say that I think based on
goal
the
scored,
rules.
Based on goal scored.
Tom and Kaylin are champion. Based on the spirit of the Golden Boot Draft as defending champion, I would have liked to award David Goss, spiritual energy compensation as Tom and Kaylin unfortunately take this title.
Look at the copium from the chat.
This is
trying to take it away from us.
Tom, I love that your lawyers were able to get you a championship.
I love that you don't understand the rules. It's pretty obvious.
I'm just saying,
this was my first year in this, and I got
it. I'm just saying in the streets, we don't need rules. We just play.
That's right.
We just play the game the way the game's meant to be played.
Oh. We won with Sebastian Ferreira giving me a 0 goals, 0 assists.
He had Lewis Morgan on 0-0. He had Derek Etienne on 0-2.
The one that killed me, or still kills me, besides Derek Etienne, which was an unfortunate season, is that Bernadeschi didn't do anything.
And didn't he get a brace in the first game, right?
Yeah, I thought he would back his way into like at least 10 goals.
You were very unlucky, to be fair. Rory Diaz having an injury-strewn year.
I overcorrected.
Lewis Morgan off MVP.
Last year I
drops.
Went like Mason Toy, all the young guys. No one did it. So then this year I was like, I'm going to go Rui Diaz. I'm going to go with Giassi Zardes. I'll go with the vets. Lewis Morgan, obviously MVP season, and it didn't work out for me. Also, Johnny Russell, cool to show up to the party. Could have used it like any other time this season.
Shout out to my guy, Denny Bwanga. Oh my goodness, just electric.
Wow, a double Golden Boot champion, Denny Bwanga, of MLS and the Golden Boot Draft.
Triple.
Did you spray paint one for him too?
Oh wow, yeah, he got the treble.
The fans gave him a spray painted golden. Did you not see that?
I didn't. Yeah. That's awesome.
The LAFC fans brought a spray painted golden shoe to the game.
He scored 6 goals in the last like 10 days.
Yeah, he just saved
Thank
you.
God.
Well, I thought early in the season, I thought I was going to lose because Cucho was the assist king and everything was Zellerayan.
We had Zellerayan.
And then I lost on assists after all of that. That drives
this
me
This has been an when electric when second Zellerayan season got of the Golden Boot Draft.
When Zellerayan got transferred out, me and Kaylin were like, oh no.
Yeah.
Because at that point, obviously Brenner was gone. Van Zier was in and out, and then he would end up getting hurt. All of the other stuff, I was like, oh no, like that was like our consistent guy. And then we got 4 total goals from Jesus Ferrer and Hany Mukhtar down the stretch. Since like June.
It's also fitting that
this is why Tom's so upset about Nashville and Hani.
Yeah.
I was pissed
because of this. I was like, Tom has too much invested in this debate.
How many times did he get shut out
20 minutes ago?
So here's something interesting for you. The 13 assist difference here. Three of those made up by Diego Rossi, a choice of Tom. No assist for Chicho Arango, so you didn't get an assist out of him. And then, in the most fitting end to this season, Martin Ojeda, 10 assists, makes up the other difference.
Where are those?
Martin Ojeda!
So I think the other thing is this. So obviously my team scored more goals, so there's a little bit of frustration in the fan base with that. But the other thing is, are second assists counted in this?
Yes, any MLS assists.
Are you trying to find another way to
no, I'm just saying I think as a crew, we need to sit down. We need to watch every player's assists of both of our teams. And we need to decide who really has these assists.
You think that you could make up 13 assists on
Eric? I'm just saying Football Reference, non-second assist, Martin Ojeda, 7 assists.
Okay, so you can have
those. I'm not saying I know. I'm just
chopping three off.
I'm just asking questions.
Yeah, Cucho had 3 less assists as well on second. So
okay,
right
cool.
There.
Let's go watch them all.
Do you really think that you would make up 13 different assists?
I just want to make sure that everyone feels
you're coping
good.
Hard, man. It's
if we're going to a recap, we're going to a recap.
I just want to make sure
Kaelin
that everyone walks away
champions.
Feeling like democracy
Tom and Kaelin.
Was had.
Yeah.
No, Tom and Kaelin.
I understand that. Congratulations.
Under the iron fist.
Congratulations. It doesn't count in the trophy draft, of course, which we're still tracking
really
as well. But
I'll give you this. Kaelin scored a goal for Brooke Hatton last week, so I'll give you that. That's an extra goal. So you just tied me with Chicho Arango.
All right, we're getting out of here. Wednesday night, the wild card.
Did we put our names next to stuff?
Well, we have to for the wild card round, but we can wait. We can wait on Bracket Challenge.
No, I'm saying for the wild card.
Yeah, Wednesday night, New York Red Bulls at 7:30 hosting Charlotte FC. What you got?
Did we get anything right from the last one, by the way? I think I picked Charlotte and Montreal, and I think I picked SKC.
You all picked Montreal. I remember.
Tom went 4 for 4. He can guarantee.
To be fair, I was walking my dog being like, why is nobody saying Montreal's bad? Why is nobody saying this? That's how I listen to the shows when I'm like, because I feel like we're talking.
In. We are not shocked.
Yeah. Red Bulls or Charlotte?
You guys go.
Red Bulls.
Red Bulls.
All right, I'll throw Charlotte in there.
Yeah, you got to have a contrarian. You just got to have it.
I mean, I don't feel good about it either way for either team. Again, the Swiderski thing. Charlotte's a little bit of form, a little bit of confidence. Yeah.
Seed the doubt.
I just don't know where the goals come from for Red Bulls. And that's, it's always the conversation. Feels like Charlotte should be a good matchup for them. But Andrew Privet's in the running for MLS Newcomer of the Year. I'm just saying.
Anders says in my ear, 10 goals combined in 104 combined games for the Red Bulls forwards this year.
It's bad.
Ow.
Ryan White's got some goals though.
Sporting Kansas City, San Jose. I will take Kansas City.
I'm going chalk. It's boring, but yeah, Kansas City.
Yeah.
I'll go SKC as well.
Doyle did the math. I think it's something like in single elimination playoff matches MLS, like almost 70% of home teams win. Feels like.
Didn't SKC lose at home to San Jose in the playoffs?
Sounds familiar.
2020, was it? Like right at the end of Wando's career?
Yeah. When they had a -16 goal difference when they got in the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Electric.
All right, let's end with this. San Diego are headed to MLS in 2025, MLS's 30th club. We found out their name, San Diego FC. And we've got a crest as well, plus colors, chrome and azul. So welcome, San Diego FC. We eagerly await your first signings. And, I don't know, talking about whatever the heck you managed to accomplish. But this is the first bit of the puzzle. They'll watch from home as the playoffs begin on Wednesday. And we will watch as well and update you on Friday. We'll see you then. Have a great week. Adios.